drop up a little bit.
No, yeah, but even I do that, but then I, if I roll over, it's just, oh.
That'll wake you up.
You want to make an announcement about that water?
No, I mean, I figure somebody, okay. Community service person probably did it.
All right.
That's why I say we probably just did it.
Well,
we've got a faucet thing where you turn the water, and if you want to spray, it'll come out of both hoses, and you won't know that it's coming out over there on the soaker hoses, and so it was left on all night.
So we have a flood in the garden. We're going to spend one or two more days on forgiveness. So let's go to Matthew 18. John, will you read the parable starting in verse 21 to 35?
Read John?
Yeah.
18:21 to 35. Then came Peter to him and said, Lord, how oft shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Till seven times? Jesus saith unto him, I say not unto thee until seven times, but unto 70 times 7. Therefore is the kingdom of heaven likened unto a certain king, which would take account of his servants. When he had begun to reckon, one was brought unto him that owed him 10,000 talents. But for as much as he had not to pay, his Lord commanded him to be sold, and his wife and children and all that he had, and payment be made. The servant therefore fell down and worshipped him, saying, Lord, have patience with me, and I will pay thee all. Then the Lord of that servant was moved with compassion, and loosed him, and forgave him the debt. The same servant went out and found one of his fellow servants, which owed him 100 pence. And he laid hands on him and took him by the throat, saying, Pay me what thou owest. And his fellow servant fell down at his feet and besought him, saying, Have patience with me, and I will pay thee all. And he would not, but went and cast him into prison until he should pay the debt. So when his fellow servants saw what was done, they were very sorry and came and told unto their lord all that was done. Then his Lord, after that he had called him, said unto him, O thou wicked servant, I forgave thee all that debt because thou desiredst me. Shouldst not thou also have compassion on thy fellow servant, even as I had pity on thee? And his Lord was wroth and delivered him to the tormentors till he should pay all that was due unto him. So likewise shall my heavenly Father do also unto you, if you from your hearts forgive not every one his brother for their trespasses.
It's this phrase, from your heart forgive, is difficult to translate. And so that's why the only way that I've been able to explain it is that you have to protect in your inner being, in your very essence, the right for that person to have wronged you or that situation to have been as it was. Because unless that occurred exactly as it did, then you couldn't see the kingdom of heaven as it is, as you do today, and it, that increases as the way gets narrower. The interesting thing here is about this 10,000 talents. It doesn't say whether it's gold or silver, but at the time of Christ, obviously the talent was just like any other money. It varied with the time that you were in. The hailstones that fell during the plague in Exodus, they were one talent. And at that time, the best scholarship, one talent was 97 pounds. So you had a 97-pound hailstones. But here, it's more so. If it's talent, the talent is silver. If the thing you're talking about is silver, a talent of silver at the time of Christ weighed 100 pounds. A talent of gold weighed 200 pounds. We can't even conceive of how much money that was, either whether it was gold or silver. And the 100 pence, that is, it's a denarius in the ancient times, and it meant that it was a day's wages. So it varied too, but one was an incalculable amount that was forgiven, and the other was a day's wages that he didn't forgive. And the lesson is, no matter how severe the wrong that you perceive was done to you, it is minuscule, it is nothing compared to what you owe the Father. There's a general, it was because of our culture and the way people are taught and everything else, but there's a general sense that, you know, people are basically good, or there's a little good in all of us, or and it's a cultural thing in our, because, you know, there are two kind of psychologists. One are behavioral psychologists, and one are, what's the other name? The endemic, the, no, it's, it abstract means that it's, huh?
Abstract expressionist.
No. But the behavioral, they believe and teach that if your environment changes, then you can be a better person. So, and that's the dominant in our culture. And that's why all of the social service programs and all of the things that go on with regard to, like, to solve drug addiction, you have to be educated. So you educate people. Well, the highest per capita use of illicit drugs in America, probably in the world, are from the profession that knows everything about it, namely the medical profession. And so the idea of education, it just, so the point of it is that if no matter how you've been taught and what your the cultural standard is, the idea that you aren't the servant that's talked about here, you're not the one that owes this inestimable sum to the Father because you believe there's some good in you. Even, and it's just, it's, you know, I've told you, Gary, that I believe that's at the root of a lot of stuff that goes on in terms of understanding over the years. It is so difficult for us to believe that there is none righteous, no, not one, that each one of us are the chief of sinners, that we have no right on that basis to not forgive everyone instantly from the heart. But as long as we believe that there is a little good in us, or even vice versa, as long as we believe that, let's go to Romans 3. Verse Somebody with a loud voice read from verse 10 to... Verse 20.
I'll read it. As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none that understandeth. There is none that seeketh after God. They are all gone out of the way. They are together become unprofitable. There is none that doeth good, no, not one. Their throat is an open sepulcher. With their tongues they have used deceit. The poison of asps is under their lips, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their ways, and the way of peace have they not known. There is no fear of God before their eyes. Now we know that what things soever the law saith, it saith to them who are under the law, that every mouth may be stopped, and all the world may become guilty before God.
Okay. That is a description not of some philosophical person in history, or as some teach, I don't care about what some teaches, it is you and I. Our throat is an open sepulcher. The poison of asps, everything. So this is why the cross is our only hope. Now, on the flip side of this, if you haven't forgiven yourself, and the only way you can forgive yourself is by the cross, by being dead. You can't just say, well, I'll praise God, God has forgiven me, because first of all, your inner being knows that's not true. You must see that the reason that the forgiveness happened is because now your life is in the blood, in His blood. And until you see that, you'll struggle with this. But if you haven't forgiven yourself, then what you have to do is you have to find somebody or some group of people that you can judge down. Because that's the only way you can live with yourself. You have to feel that somebody is worse than you. And that's a tell in this thing about whether or not you've forgiven yourself. And it's this incredible catch-22. You can't escape it except by the cross. And all these educational systems and all the things that the human race tries to do are just putting, a Band-Aid on a cancer. And the cancer is you and I. It's the cancer is the human race. And so as long as you're interested in what you do, how to do something, how you should behave about this, when you should say this or that, then all that it's the tell. You haven't seen that you're the chief of sinners. You haven't seen that you owe an inestimable amount that's not even conceivable. Is this communicate?
Yeah, I was thinking about the guy here. He must have thought that this whole thing was a big misunderstanding.
Oh, yeah.
In other words, he didn't feel like he really owed it. There were circumstances, a big misunderstanding, I got out of that one. He didn't understand what was going on, and so he refused to believe the reality, and that's why he could just go ahead and grab the other guy by the throat. He wasn't guilty. He wasn't culpable.
It's such an affront. First of all, it's such an affront not to forgive yourself because, as I've said so often, you think you're so special that the sacrifice of the Son of God wasn't enough for you. And you refuse at the core of your being, the way I know you've refused at the core of your being to understand that you're the chief of sinners and that you're not redeemable is the questions. Well, what should I do about this? Or what shall I do about that? It's in this, and it doesn't take discernment to see this. It doesn't take it. It just takes you having experienced. What, Gary? You're doing it again.
I was thinking about baptism. If you're forgiven and God loves you and all that, why do you have to be baptized?
Well, because baptism is just a sacrament. People don't read and see that baptism is burial. That's why there's infant baptism, where you sprinkle some water on somebody, and so that they're... That's just crazy.
Yeah.
Or so is, well, you know, I'm going to... There's not one example in the scriptures of an altar call.
Well, what?
You know, come, all eyes are closed. That's not the way it works. But we've created a society, a religious culture, that we have all these things going on that the sum total of them cause the people to see that they are not the chief of sinners. And so what we've created is a religion that's really Babylon. And it doesn't matter what you know, it's like, it's just...
If your religion is circumcision, and you never allow yourself to see the end of yourself, then you might claim understanding and have an intellectual grip on something, but it never penetrates your...
And that's why, centers. Yeah, that's why people don't want to live in community and be vulnerable, and they don't want to say what's there, because if they say what's there, it'll reveal their true... Out of the fullness of the heart, the mouth speaks. And we create all these defense mechanisms that are just goofy. But then we have to find somebody that is, we can point your finger at, because if you can't point your finger at somebody, then you can't live with yourself.
Yeah, I was thinking about that in terms of, like, you have your personal ways of doing that, and then if you have a pretty successful thing, it catches on. And
sure.
So you can, like, hey, you know, it's racism or whatever, you know, it becomes the society's way of doing it. And, you know, this makes me feel really good.
You can become Joel Osteen.
You know, it's popular. It works.
But this is so critical, and because, you know, we're studying peace. But the bottom line is, if you haven't forgiven everything, everyone, every situation, every event, everything from the heart, then it's just the cosmic tell. You think you're something good in you, and you can be right, and you can have all these kind of opinions. I'll tell you one goddamn thing.
This is tied to that, say not in your heart, who will arise. That the positions are equal. If you're not in that position, then you're self-righteous. You're finding somebody that's going to hell. As opposed to you.
So in order for this to be real, you have to forgive yourself. I don't know about you, but unless the idea that unless I have died, there's no possibility of me forgiving myself. You know, it's...
I don't know what that means.
Huh?
I don't know what that means.
If I have any integrity whatsoever, the things that I have done would prevent me from ever forgiving myself. The only way forgiveness of self is possible is by your death, i.e. the cross. So the worth then is no longer in anything about you. Your worth is only in his blood, the life is in the blood. So it's on the basis of his death and his life that we live, not on anything about me. I'm dead.
It's like within...
Wait a minute. Does that...
Yeah.
The only thing that prevents me from accepting that is unconditional forgiveness. Forgiveness has to be unconditional. There can be no... But you're saying you can forgive yourself only if... And I can't get through that.
Well, maybe you were nice. There's no way for the things that I've done, I deserve 500 death penalties.
Well, that's what you're saying. The cross is what makes that possible.
The cross is my death.
Yeah, and
it's not this, you know, sloppy agape. They just throw forgiveness around like God didn't do that. But you must forgive from the heart everything and everyone. Now, again, forgiveness is your business. Reconciliation is God's business. But if you make your forgiveness based on reconciliation or someone's response, then you'll be in this tornado or whirl eddy of back and forth.
It's sort of like, love, which neither one of those things have to do with how you feel. It's
right.
It's just a fact.
Romantic love is neurotic because it's based on need. Huh? I know, but I was speaking to one or two people here. What do you think about all this, Mr. Jeff?
Just a sponge.
I've noticed.
You never call on me to read.
And he's never forgiven you for that.
And I've listened to myself.
I called on you once to read.
And it was painful. This person makes fun of my little twangy voice.
No, this is not to be laughed off. This has to be faced.
I've found that I've been riding my bike to work, and there are 50 times during that ride that I had the opportunity to be offended by things happening, or just the road, or the road, or whatever, And it's weird because it's like, people jump at, it's like there's all kinds of stuff going on where I'm just driving my car and nothing's happening. Everything's in neutral. But it's like...
On the bike, it's
the
totally
bike,
different.
It's like I'm a little closer to reality. Yeah. It's like,
What if you crawl to work?
Test. Yeah, if I crawled on my hands and knees, then I'd be like in Mexico.
I think part of the kicker is this from the heart, because I don't think man in his construction is given the real ability to forgive completely. So this from the heart is where it tricks you up, because you can act like you've forgiven and you can convince yourself you've forgiven, and then something happens and you realize you never forgave at all.
Yeah,
it's a mental thing instead of a...
It takes it over the edge.
Yeah, so that's why this death...
involves the emotions also.
Yeah. This is tested in a body, because if it's how you respond the next time to that same deal. I mean, it's... I know you love that one, Kayla.
Well, even yesterday when we were coming home from seeing Harry, it was like, how many Levi's does it take to catch a bus? And so I blew up Jeff's phone to see if he would come pick us up, the fleet manager, and we didn't answer. And I was pissed, and of course, verbally said it, and then went on like a crack weed going nuts, going, why is he in a flight bed on here? I don't know.
Well, he knew it was you. He saw a caller ID.
I was pissed.
Oh.
Sorry.
But that's why, again, we exhort one another daily while it is still called today. That's why what John said yesterday was so important, or maybe it was yesterday, day before, whatever, that if somebody is responding negatively to people who you've said you've forgiven, then you're in deep shit, and you need exhortation at that moment.
It can't be the cheap, oh gosh, I'm supposed to forgive people, or God can't forgive me. Oh, I forgive you. If it's that level, then nothing's happened.
Well, if it's that level, then he never knew you were the chief of sinners.
Right. It's not real. You might have mouthed it, so your conscience has a break.
You also don't live on the block if you speak that way.
Well, the whole thing, again, remember how the evolution of Christianity. And a lot of it had to do with these kinds of issues, where in living in community, it's a totally different lifestyle, and it's forced upon you because you know there's a whole lot of people, right, and your words are tested by your life.
How you live, yeah.
And you know, that's just on a similar subject. That's why evangelists in the time of the first century, that when they went somewhere, they stayed for 2 and 3 years so that their words were tested by their life. He didn't just come along and, you know, whether it's on television or tent meetings or whatever it is, because it's not real. But slowly but surely, you know, first the agape feast stopped, because remember we studied this, the agape feast stopped in Western Christianity, the Seder meal, because people were getting drunk. And then it got to be too big and too much of a hassle, because they lost the idea that, you know, it was in that house church. It was that little group. And everything centered in that group. I mean, that's where the needs were met. That's where everything. It wasn't, you didn't ever defer to professionals. Even if the professionals are incompetent, you still didn't. You deferred to your body, your brethren, to meet every need, and then if it was bigger than they could meet, then you went to the next group, to the combination of seders. But you can't fake it in that kind of an environment.
Yeah, there's an aspect, it's discipleship. And you believe, okay, that's fine. Now, the discipleship is when it's proven, and
well, yeah, discipleship is the goal, not salvation is just the beginning. Anyhow, what?
You know that real estate axiom about if you're going to buy real estate, you have to consider location, and spiritually it's integrity.
Yeah.
Always.
Nothing can happen without integrity. And all integrity means is just means be one. Don't have something else going inside you and something else outside. You're one thing. Don't be like Rutledge. Well, no, you can be like Rutledge. But at first, what he was doing, At least he did it outwardly. I mean, it doesn't seem like he would do this because he's such a nice guy. But I'd be in the middle of preaching, and he'd say, "That's bullshit, Ollie."
Well, you're the one who's always inviting debate.
Well, I loved it. I still do.
You loved me back then.
But I want the debate to not to be on, I want the debate to be on eternal terms, not on some little, you know, you create some little environment and you narrow the parameters and then you can prove to yourself anything.
Same root is
integral.
Like to integrate, you're integrated as one thing.
Right.
So to me, one whole.
We can ask the mathematician, what is an integer?
I don't know, does that have anything to do with it? Integers?
It's a whole.
It's from the same root. All right, take a big guy.
I need to be all bandaged up.